Well, welcome, brethren, to another Wednesday night Bible study, where together we study the scriptures line upon line. Now, I don't know if I'm live at the moment. We went live and then we had a problem. The plan is to cover Joshua chapters 5 and 6 tonight, but I'm just going to pop over before the prayer to the channel to see if I'm coming through. And I think, oh, it looks like I am coming through. Very, very good. I'll open with a word of prayer. And then I'll go and I will check the chat to see who's here, and we'll get into Joshua chapters 5 and 6. Heavenly Father, we bow before you, as is our custom. We acknowledge that we are privileged to access your holy scriptures. We are privileged to be a part of this covenant community and to have access to our history, our shared history. And as we go back and understand our shared history, we have a clearer vision of our future, your plan for us, your plan for Israel, your plan for the whole world. Thank you so much, Father. Thank you for all the brethren that join faithfully every week. Please bless us, Father. We're all going through different things, different seasons, different trials, different blessings. Please be with all of us. And help us, Father, through all of this to be faithful. And we pray, God, that as we study together, we'll deepen our faith and we'll deepen our loyalty to you and to Christ. And we ask this in the mighty name of Jesus Christ. Amen. All right. So I'm glad that I'm going through. I went live and then it just cut out and it said your stream has ended it unexpectedly. And then I just went live again. And usually when that happens, I'm not able to broadcast, but I'm able to record. But praise God, the technology held out, and we are live. I see Kay Feeder was the first one in today. Good evening, Kay Feeder. Rosebud right behind. Grizilda 73, welcome. Pastor Murray, welcome. Dave and Deb, nice to see you. Bruce Ellis, nice to see you. Chaw Jaws, welcome. Jeff Flanick, nice to see you, brother. Christy Romeen is here, welcome. Pep Square, welcome. Rick Four, welcome. Excellent. Wonderful. And I'm coming through loudly and clearly. God be praised. Okay. We want to cover 2 chapters this evening, God willing. Joshua 5 and Joshua chapter 6. I'll go ahead and share my screen. And you already know that it's very difficult for me just to break into a new chapter because the chapter breaks are artificial. They're helpful, but they're artificial. And we always want a bit of context and continuity between what we studied last week and where we are this week. I'll just pick up a couple of verses from Joshua chapter 4 to roll us into chapter 5. And we see here in the end of chapter 4 last week that Jehovah, your God, dried up the waters of Jordan from before you, until you were passed over. Remember, as soon as the priest stepped, the sole of their foot touched the water, and the water was at its peak. It was just flowing at its fullest. It's the most dangerous then. You'd expect if they stepped their foot in the water, they'd just be washed away. Instead, as soon as the priest stepped his foot in the water just stopped. It was like a wall, and it stayed dry, and they could pass over. They set up a monument right in the middle of the river that was dried out. And then when they crossed over, they set up another monument, and each of the tribes got a stone and set up this monument so that later generations would never forget. And it's amazing how we hear so many stories about the crossing of the Red Sea, but not so many stories about the crossing of the River Jordan. And it was like, they should never forget this miracle. And so God enabled them. He's the one that gave them passage into the promised land, until they were passed over, as the Lord your God did to the Red Sea, which he dried up from before us until you were gone over. That all, and the reason why he did this miracle in the crossing over Jordan is that all the people of the earth might know the hand of Jehovah. And they certainly did. As we roll into chapter 5 and 6, we're going to see how the people were terrified when they heard about this miracle. And as Israel comes into the promised land, into her land that was promised to her, This is really a benefit and a blessing to the whole earth. And we mustn't be shy, and we mustn't be apologetic about the fact that this land is promised eternally to Israel. And by Israel occupying this land, that's how the rest of the world is blessed. That's how the whole world comes to salvation. And so God's purpose is that the earth may know the hand of the Lord, that it is mighty. Nobody can resist God. That's why he can declare the end from the beginning. There are two attributes that makes our God unique, and that is proof that he's the true God. One is his ability to declare the end from the beginning. That is that Moses could, or not that he could, that he did predict everything that's happening today and everything that's about to happen into eternity. Moses did that because Moses was serving the true God. So that's one characteristic of the true God. He's the only God that can tell you in advance what's going to happen, and nobody can stop it. Nobody can frustrate it. That's how we know it's the true God. The second attribute, as I read the scriptures, that makes our God unique and unmatched by the so-called gods is his covenant faithfulness. That when he promises something, he never turns back on it. And because he is God, and nobody can prevent him from doing his will, those promises are ironclad. And we had better be sure in our preaching of the gospel that we do not make our God a liar, that we do not take his promises and just negate them and throw them out like they don't mean anything. Like, yeah, our God said it, but he wasn't serious. This is a dangerous place to be. And we don't want to be on the wrong side of history, or the wrong side with God, or the wrong side of prophecy. The right side of prophecy is to be standing on solid ground. And that solid ground is our God declares the end from the beginning, and he is the only God who is like him that keeps covenant. So by crossing in this miraculous way into the promised land, the earth, all the people of the earth may know the hand of the Lord, that it is mighty, and that you, Israel, might fear Jehovah, your God, forever. Israel is to hold God in high esteem and awe and fear him eternally. That's the whole point of the promised land. And again, we need to be very careful that our concept of the gospel, our concept of the Sabbatismos, entering into his rest, does not negate his promises. It's impossible for God to lie. Now, with that, we come into chapter 5. And it came to pass when all the kings of the Amorites, and so, you know, these kingdoms are sort of, think of them like today we talk about mayors. There's all these different cities with different mayors. Well, these were sort of city states. And when all the kings of the Amorites, these are Canaanites, where they're in the land of Canaan, which were on the side of Jordan westward, so they're on crossing over, Israel has to cross from the east side to the west side, and all the kings of the Canaanites, which were by the sea, heard that the Lord had dried up the waters of Jordan before the children of Israel. So all these people that live on this land are generally referred to as Canaanites. So even the Amorites are referred to as Canaanites. It's like the way we would talk about Middle Eastern or Arabs today. People we call Iranians Arabs. They're not really Arabs, but we call everybody who's in that Middle East area Arabs. So these are Canaanites, but there's different tribes and there's different kings. They heard that Jehovah had dried up the waters of Jordan before the children of Israel. Now, it's not just, it's one thing that he dried up the waters of Jordan, but there's a sort of a dry season when the water is not rushing in a mighty way, and maybe God could have chosen that time. The time that he chose to have Israel cross over was at the peak of the rainy season and the rushing of the waters. So these people would have thought, we have time. They may be coming, but not yet. And then for them to hear, no, they're here. Their God dried up the river, made it dry so they could pass over on dry land. This would have sent shockwaves, and this news would have spread like wildfire. They heard that the Lord, Jehovah, had dried up the waters of Jordan from before the children of Israel until we were passed over, that their heart melted. Why would their heart melt? What does that mean, their heart melted? Neither was their spirit in them anymore because of the children of Israel. I'll tell you why their heart melted. And I hope we're not squeamish about this. Their heart melted because they are Canaanites. And they do not belong in this land. They may be indigenous to the land. They may have occupied the land first. But by God's decree, they do not belong there. Their hearts melted because Israel is not coming over to say, nice to meet you. Can we sit down and have a cup of tea? How do you like your coffee? No, they're coming over to slaughter. And the only thing geographically that was protecting the Canaanites from the slaughter that's about to happen was the River Jordan. Now that defense is broken. And so now it's a military battle. And they already know that the God of the Israelites is the true God. And there's no way they can withstand the military might, the supernatural military might of Israel. That's why their hearts melted. Inheriting the promised land. Let me say it like this. Inheriting the promised land is bloody business. It's a bloody business. It's not for the faint of heart. And that's what we see here. And that's what we're going to see in the future. I had a brother say to me, he couldn't listen to me anymore because I was preaching that Jesus is a warrior and he's the Lord of hosts. He's a God of armies and he's coming to conquer. And this brother said he can't listen to me anymore. He's gone to another congregation because his Jesus is a Jesus of peace. Well, let's see how this plays out. Because Joshua is a type of Jesus, just as Moses was a type of Jesus. In fact, let me say it this way. I think we can all agree that Moses is a type of Jesus. He was the lawgiver and he was the intermediator between Israel and God. And so he's a type of Jesus. But then I think we should also agree that Joshua is a type of Moses. That the very things that established the authority of Moses, we see them repeated, those patterns, we see them repeated with Joshua. So if Joshua is like Moses and Moses is like Christ, well, if A equals B and B equals C, then A equals C. Just logic. So both Moses and Joshua together represent Christ. Moses as the lawgiver and the intermediator, and Joshua as the warrior and the one that takes Israel into the promised land. So again, this brother can no longer listen to me because I preach that Jesus is a God of war and that he's coming to conquer. No, his Jesus is full of peace. Well, he is in fact full of peace, but he has to rule with a rod of iron to get that peace. So they're just depressed. All is lost. Israel has crossed over. They're here now. There's nothing we can do. At that time, the time now that they have crossed over and news has spread that they have crossed over. At that time, Jehovah said unto Joshua, okay, now at this time, make you sharp knives and circumcise again the children of Israel the second time. The second time. There was a first time. Let's read it. Genesis 17, verse 10. This is my covenant, which you shall keep between me and you and your seed after you. Every man child among you shall be circumcised. So let's get this really clear. This is my covenant. God is a covenant-keeping God. And the sign of this covenant is the circumcision and the removal of the foreskin. Every child, every male child has to do this. And you shall circumcise the flesh of your foreskin, and it shall be a token of the covenant between me and you. And we know that this is actually very symbolic of circumcising the heart and removing the heart of flesh so that we are in this pure relationship with our Father. So this is the sign of the covenant. And he that is 8 days old shall be circumcised among you. Every single man child in your generations, every single one. He that is born in the house or bought with money of any stranger, which is not of your seed. So this is a serious, serious matter. It is the sign of the covenant between me and you, God says to Israel. And so because of this covenant, all of you will be circumcised. All your children will be circumcised, every single one. So now Joshua is told by God, when they're crossed over into the promised land, your children have to be circumcised. There needs to be now this second circumcision. What does this mean? Why weren't they circumcised? Given that it's part of the covenant. It's like as soon as your child is born on the eighth day, they have to be circumcised. This is the covenant. Verse 3. And Joshua obeyed. He made him sharp knives and circumcised the children of Israel at the hill of foreskins. So Joshua would have authorized this. He's just not Joshua doing all of this for millions of people. It's Joshua overseeing this. So first they have to make all the knives, and then they have to appoint people to do this. And the whole day is about removing this, the foreskins, and to show the sign of covenant, which their fathers had done. And there's so many children that have come into the land that there's now a hill of all the foreskins. It's a lot of people. And he says here in verse 4, and this is why Joshua circumcised. Why did Joshua have to do this ritual? This is why. All the people that came out of Egypt that were males, even all the men of war who were supposed to come and take the land, every single one of them, save two, died in the wilderness, by the way, after they came out of Egypt. So it's like, well, that's not really answering the question, is it? Because we're not talking about those people. So the fact that they all died and they were all circumcised, that's actually not the question. The question we have is, why weren't their children circumcised? Because it's a sign of the covenant. And it's required on the eighth day. It's a requirement. So how can it be that there's so many of them that their foreskins, there's a whole mountain or a hill made of their foreskins. How can this be when this is a requirement of the covenant? And so just telling me that, you know, I'm asking you one question about the second generation that's going into the promised land, and you're telling me about the first generation that died in the wilderness. What's the connection? Well, the connection is, when they were in the wilderness, they were cursed. They were alienated from God. There really was no covenantal relationship to speak of. Joshua and Caleb, yes, but all the rest of the Israelites, God was furious with them. And he said, they'll never enter my rest. And the wording, when we look in Hebrews 4, sort of the common vernacular, would be, over my dead body will such a thing happen. God was furious. Absolutely not. These people will never enter my rest. They're not going into the promised land. So when they were wandering around the wilderness for 40 years, they were hanging by a thread. And they were rejected by God. That's what this verse is saying. That in verse 4, this is why Joshua had to do the circumcision. And the reason is, he says, all the people that came out of Egypt that were males, all the men of war who were supposed to come into the promised land and take the promised land, they all died in the wilderness. So God is watching over them to make sure that every single one of them dies and absolutely has no chance of entering the promised land. They were cursed. And so there's no point in you circumcising your children as a sign of continuity of the covenant when you're out of covenant. There's no covenant with you. You're out. The covenant is now hanging by a thread with Joshua and Caleb. And so after all that generation is dead, now you can come into the promised land. But you can't come into the promised land like Gentiles. If you're coming into the promised land, we need to be in covenant. Covenant requires God. It requires Israel, the covenant between God and Israel. And it requires the land. God, Israel, and the land. And then the laws, so holiness, the code of holiness. All these things are required for the covenant. So when they were in the wilderness, they were not in covenant, save Joshua and Caleb. So what he's saying here is, this is the reason why. Because the people that came out of Egypt, they were cursed, and God was furious, and God was unequivocal. They're not going into the land. They're out. They're going to die. And not until all of them are dead can Israel come into the promised land. Now, all the people that came out were circumcised. All the people that came out were in covenant with God. But all the people that were born in the wilderness, by the way, as they came forth out of Egypt, them they had not circumcised. There was no relationship. They were alienated from the covenantal relationship. So they're wandering around the wilderness until they die. God rejected them, save Caleb and Joshua. And so when they were all dead, they all had the sign of the circumcision, but they failed. And that's why we have to be very, very careful. We need to be super careful about this concept that creeps into the church from time to time. Once saved, always saved. There is no such pattern anywhere in the scriptures of once saved, always saved. Hey, I'm circumcised. Now I can do whatever I want. God is bound to bring me into the promised land. Really? How about this? God will be bound by his word to not bring you into the promised land. That he'll wait 40 years until every single one of them is dead, even though they carried the sign of the covenant. So even though we might be baptized, let us not think we can get away with murder. Let us not think we can get away with adultery, lying, stealing, breaking the law, abusing one another, and say, well, I'm baptized. God has to bring me into the promised land. No, there's no such pattern like that. And so these people were in covenant, but rejected. So he says, the children were not circumcised because they're not in covenant. So you're not in covenant. How can you circumcise the next generation? You're all rejected until God chooses to say, okay, now's the time. For the children of Israel walked 40 years in the wilderness. Why 40 years? Until all the people that were men of war, who were supposed to inherit the land and go and fight for it, which came out of Egypt, were destroyed. This is, wow. Let's read that over again. The people of Israel that had the might and the strength and the capability to take the promised land, every single one of them had to die. They had to be destroyed. That's the wrath that they incurred, where God swore in his wrath, you will never enter this land. Because they obeyed not the voice of the Lord, they were not in covenant. Unto whom Jehovah swore that he would not show them the land. No way. I'm going to wait until all of you are dead. Which the Lord swore unto their fathers that he would give us. So there's this conundrum where God is bound by promise to bring them into this land. But then he swears by his own word that these people will not enter the land. And so now the covenant is hanging by a thread. It's Joshua and Caleb and how they bring up the next generation. It's a land that flows with milk and honey. And so we see that here in Numbers 14, verse 23, God says, surely they shall not see the land which I swore unto their fathers. So Israel will inherit this land, they won't. Neither shall any of them that provoked me see it. There's a full alienation here. Let's not pretend. Yes, God kept them alive. He kept, gave them manna. They kept the Sabbath. So there was, you know, there's some recognition this is Israel, but he oversaw the whole operation that every single one of them would die and they would not see the land. And so there was no covenantal special relationship. There's no intimacy here. God is actually watching over them to make sure they die. And verse 7 of Joshua 5, and their children, whom he raised up in their stead. These were men of war. The whole intent was for them to take the land, but he raised up their children instead. Them Joshua circumcised. So it's the children now that are coming into covenant, that they're resuming the special intimate covenantal relationship. Them Joshua circumcised. For they were uncircumcised. As long as their parents were alive, there was no relationship. And there's no way they could come into the promised land. And so the covenant cannot kick in fully until there's intimacy between God the Father and Israel occurring on the land and preserved by the holiness code. These children who he raised up in their stead. So now they're at the age of being men of war. He raised them up instead. And that's another thing as well. Another pattern we should be aware of. That running around saying we're the church of God, we keep the Sabbath, is not enough. And being conceited, being overconfident in our position in the covenant, we can be replaced. God can raise up, in fact, Romans 11, Paul says, be careful. If he's able to raise up Gentiles and graft Gentiles, the wild olive branch into the natural brand, the natural tree, how much more could he break, even though he broke off the natural branches, how much more could he break off the wild branch and bring back the natural branch? We need to be very, very humble about this and very, very, very humble and grateful about our position within God's covenantal plan. But God can, even now, he could be, it took maybe say 20 years out of the 40. After 20 years, he'd be ready, but he waited 40 because all of that generation had to die. So say 40 years, get two generations, or a full generation, but two cohorts of fighting men. And that took time. So while we're here studying the scriptures, we've got to be careful. God can be preparing right now as we speak the natural branches to come back and replace us. So let us not be arrogant. Let us be grateful and faithful. Their children whom he raised up in their stead, them Joshua circumcised. They're the ones that come into this covenantal relationship. For they were uncircumcised because of their parents. There was no covenantal relationship because they had not circumcised them by the way. They did not have the authority to do so. And it came to pass when they had done circumcising all the people, massive operation, that they abode in their places in the camp till they were whole. So all the different tribes have been circumcised and they need to wait and heal. And Jehovah said unto Joshua, this day, listen to this, verse 9. Jehovah said unto Joshua, today I have rolled away the reproach of Egypt from off you. So the people wanted to go back to Egypt. The people could not shake off Egypt, and they were cursed as a result, and out of covenant. That special bond was broken, and God just watched over them until every one of them was dead. That was a reproach. It was an alienation. And now the people come in, their next generation comes into the land, and they're all circumcised, meaning they're coming back into this intimate relationship with God. And when it's all done and they're healing now from the circumcision and now the covenantal unity is restored, Jehovah says to Joshua, today I've taken away, I've rolled away the reproach of Egypt from you. That's why the name of the place is called Rolled Away unto this day. So that city is called Rolled Away. And we called it Rolled Away before the people even got there because, you know, at the time of writing, that's what it's called, Rolled Away. And it's called Rolled Away because the people of Israel in the wilderness were cursed, alienated, and watched over by God personally to die. And now they come into the promised land, the covenant is being restored, and that curse has been rolled away. That's why it's called Gilgal, or Rolled Away unto this day. Now, I didn't want to put this here. I'm going to come back to this, Matthew 1 to 5. Matthew 1 verses 2 to 5. I'll come back to that. The children of Israel encamped in Gilgal. So that's where they did all the circumcision, and that's where they healed. And so they encamped in Rolled Away. And they kept the Passover on the 14th day of the month. So they passed over on the 10th day. And so it's been now 4 days to take care of circumcising all the males, healing, and then observing the Passover. Now, what Joshua is implying, or what this verse is implying, Joshua 5:10, is that the Passover was not kept in the wilderness. And it was kept in Egypt for them to come out of Egypt and then come into the wilderness. But then they alienated themselves from God. And there was this curse, this reproach of Egypt that sat on them for 40 years. There's no point in them keeping the Passover. The Passover is something for people in covenant to keep. And so the Passover was not kept. I'm going to go further and say, apart from the Sabbath, none of the holy days were kept. And I'll back that up in a minute. But let me right now just put in the chat. I want to put in the chat. Hopefully I can sign in here. And I'm going to put in the chat a sermon that I gave back at the time of Pentecost that talked about this passage. I was making another point there, but it's important to put the two and two together. So that's in the archives. But here now we see the covenantal people. They can't keep covenant if they're uncircumcised. And not only were the children uncircumcised, but the parents were cursed. And they had become Gentiles to God. They were, even though they were physically circumcised, they were uncircumcised to God. So none of these people kept the Passover. And then you would say, well, what about Joshua and Caleb? Well, certainly they were in covenant because they were circumcised. But I'm going to show that none of these holy days were actually expected to be kept, except for the Sabbath, because the Sabbath precedes all of this. Sabbath precedes all of it until they're in the promised land. And now they're in the promised land. The first thing, and they're timed it right at the beginning of the year. The first thing they do is they keep Passover, unleavened bread, and start counting to Pentecost. And so that between the feast sermon is about the count to Pentecost. So they kept the Passover on the 14th day of the month at even in the plains of Jericho. So they're now in the promised land. And they did eat of the old corn of the land on the day after the Passover, unleavened cakes and parched corn in the very same day. So this eating of the land, so they did not plant this harvest. The Canaanites planted it. But it's in the promised land, and they have come into the promised land, and now, instead of surviving on manna, they can now have the harvest. That they didn't have to prepare it. God used the Canaanites to prepare it. And there it is. It's all there. They just harvest it. And so they keep the Passover. And really, they're going to be doing this for many years, probably decades, because conquering the land is done over time. It's not overnight. Okay, we're here. It's going to take them many decades to get a hold of most of the land, and they never get all of it. But when they first conquer a city and come in, they didn't have time. 10 years, 20 years later, and they conquer a city, they live off the harvest of that land. It's the promised land, and they're the covenant people. The land is for them. And so they ate of the old corn of the land on the day after the Passover, unleavened cakes, parched corn in the very same day. And the manna ceased on the day after they had eaten of the old corn of the land. This is clearly showing the transition. Instead of depending on manna as they did in the wilderness, now they have been circumcised. They've come into full covenant with God, and they've inherited, at least begin the process of inheriting the promised land. And so the manna ceases, meaning you're now in the land and you can now begin to live off this land flowing with milk and honey. Neither had the children of Israel manna anymore, but they did eat of the fruit of the land of Canaan that year. So that's the first year they come in. They conquer the city Jericho, but there's so much land to be conquered. But no more manna now. Now they can just begin to live off the harvest of the promised land. And it came to pass, when Joshua was by Jericho, that he lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, there stood a man over against him with his sword drawn in his hand. This is a warrior. And what we're going to see as the story unfolds here, this is a manifestation of God himself. And I do believe this is Yeshua. And he has a sword. He's a warrior. He's a man of war. So Joshua sees him for what he is. He's a warrior. And so Joshua has one question. You're a warrior. You're ready to go to war. You're ready to slaughter. I have a question for you. Who are you going to slaughter? So this man, he sees this man with a sword in his hand. And Joshua went unto him. So Joshua is bold. Joshua's not afraid. And said unto him, are you for us or for our adversaries? Be careful how you answer. Because if you answer you're for our adversaries, you needn't think I have any fear of you. I will slaughter you on the spot. So speak up. Are you for us or are you for our adversaries? You're clearly a man of war. And the man answered, no. Neither. Neither. I don't report to you. I don't have to give you an answer. You report to me. So I'm above the human plane. He said to him, neither. But as captain of the host of the Lord, have I now come. So this is the role that I'm in. And we're going to see, because of the exchange, Joshua's going to worship this man. This man's going to tell him, remove your shoes because I'm here. This is holy ground. This is God. And he's a warrior. And Joshua fell on his face to the earth, meaning he worshiped him. He worshiped him. If this was just an angel, when John prostrated before the angel said, get up. Don't worship me. Worship God. Here, Joshua falls down and prostrates himself, and he worshiped. He worshiped. Are you for us? Are you for our adversaries? Be careful how you answer. I'll kill you on the spot. Neither. Joshua falls down and worships him and said unto him, what says my Lord unto his servant? I thought you were going to report to me. In fact, I report to you. What's the command you have for me? Now, I just want to just pause here because I said earlier, Moses was a type of Christ. Joshua is a type of Christ. Moses was the lawgiver and the intermediator. No one else has that role. Joshua is the one that takes Israel into the promised land. Jesus Christ is the lawgiver, and Jesus Christ is the only mediator. But Jesus Christ is also the one to take Israel into the promised land. Where Joshua actually failed, Jesus Christ will succeed. And so we see this now, this same God of war in Revelation 19. I had a brother say, I can't listen to you anymore. My Jesus is peace. My Jesus doesn't fight. Revelation 19, verse 11. John says, I saw heaven opened, and behold, a white horse. And he that sat upon him was called Faithful and True. Faithful and True. This being is a being of pure beauty. Pure beauty. And we better acknowledge his character. And his character is to be faithful. And when his covenant people are being abused, he is faithful. And in the beauty of holiness, he is going to defend his people. And in righteousness, he judges and makes war. So our brother, unfortunately, is so consumed with traditional milquetoast Christianity and a milquetoast version of Jesus Christ that he can't see Christ. He can't recognize Christ. And he can't recognize the beauty in Christ in his faithfulness. And that he makes war. He makes war. Satan makes war. And Jesus Christ puts it down. And Jesus Christ, or Joshua, I was going to say Jesus Christ is a type of Joshua. That's wrong. Joshua is a type of Yeshua. And verse 14, and the armies which were in heaven followed him. There are armies in heaven that are waiting for the command to come to earth. And this is how the kingdom will be ushered in. And this is how Israel will be brought into the promised land. The armies which were in heaven followed him upon white horses, clothed in fine linen, white and clean. Do not accuse Jesus or his army of any unrighteousness. And this is what our brother has to get over, to shake off this false doctrine that Jesus is pure and his army is pure and blood must be shed. Entering the promised land is a bloody business because of Satan. Back to Joshua 5, verse 15. And the captain of the Lord's host said unto Joshua, take your shoe from off your foot, for the place where you stand is holy. You're in the presence of God. And where God stands, that land is set aside. And you're now sharing land with God. Take off your shoes. That's the very same thing we saw with Moses. So we see that Joshua is a type of Moses. Moses is a type of Christ. Therefore, Joshua is a type of Christ. Loose your shoe from off your foot, for the place where you stand is holy. And Joshua did so. Here we see in Exodus 3, verse 5. And he said, draw not nearer. Take your shoes from off your feet, for the place whereon you stand is holy ground. Moses is a type of Christ. Joshua is a type of Moses. And God is showing the pattern so that we associate Joshua with Moses and therefore see that Moses and Joshua together are a type of Christ. Chapter 6. In fact, let me just read the first part of chapter 6. I'm just looking at the time and I don't want to keep everyone too late. But we'll just come into chapter 6 now. Should be no chapter break. Now, Jericho was straitly shut up because of the children of Israel. None went out and none came in. So it's like it's besieged and they don't dare step. They have a wall, the very reinforced wall to protect them. The river has dried up. So the last defense now is the wall and they're just waiting. What's going to happen here? Hopefully the wall will be a strong enough fortress. The river certainly failed. Hopefully the wall will not fail and it will be a strong enough fortress to keep Israel out. But now the battle, that you can feel the tension in the air. What's going to happen next? I'm sure inside the walls of Jericho, they are preparing for this battle. They don't know when it's going to happen. They know it's going to happen. Taking the promised land is a bloody business. And so none went out, none came in. And the Lord said, same Jehovah, Joshua's having this conversation with, and Jehovah said unto Joshua, see, I have given into your hand Jericho and the king thereof and their mighty men of valor. So this is one of the most powerful cities in Canaan. And they start here. And Joshua is saying in this exchange, are you for us or are you for our adversaries? Neither. You work for me. And I'm telling you, I'm a warrior. I'm going to oversee this operation. I'm going to oversee this bloody business of taking the promised land. And I've already given you the victory. So let me stop there. We've just the first part of chapter 6. I took a little longer with chapter 5 than I thought I would. But we'll, God willing, come back next week and continue this strange exchange between Joshua and Jehovah, and the confidence with which Joshua can lead as the general of the hosts of armies of Israel, with the confidence he can now lead in conquering one of the greatest cities and one of the most fortified cities in Canaan, the land of Jericho. I'll just quickly check the chat and see if there's anything that I need to be responding to. And I will let you know that this coming Sabbath, Deacon Jan will be bringing us the sermon. I finished up the series, From Scattering